The following is an interview with Judy Kaufman, staff assistant to the president in the office of Barbara Franklin. It was conducted by Susan Yowell in room 336 of the old executive office building, December 21st, 1972. We haven't talked to anyone working in the area of women in government and so forth, and I think it's an area which is unique to this administration.
Really is. Yeah, absolutely.
And since it's a new program, it's something which really should be documented.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I'll tell you, it's really been a first, that's for sure.
Could you begin by just very basically telling me when you joined the staff and what your position has been?
Yeah, I joined the staff in November of 1971, and the reason was I had met Barbara Franklin shortly after the president brought her to the White House to find women for him to appoint to top policy positions. And I worked with Barbara quite closely because I had been a women's organization as public relations director at the Business and Professional Women's Federation. And in working there, I had worked with the White House in helping set up a talent bank which the White House could refer to for names of women when they were looking for women appointees. Now that, of course, was an outside talent bank, and then Barbara set up a talent bank here at the White House when she came. With this whole women's movement, we like to kid that we call it women's movement lowercase instead of the uppercase women's lib type thing, has the interest has increased so much over the past few years, and I think the very fact that President Nixon has already appointed more women than have ever been in government for top jobs is indicative of the fact that this is gaining more and more momentum and will continue to go on. So the feeling was that there was a need to improve our credibility with the public as to just what the president has done for women, because we had women's organizations breathing down our necks. They were sure that we really didn't care about women and that everything that the president had done was strictly tokenism. And this, of course, was not so. So my job, when I came in November, my assignment was to publicize this, promote it in any way I could think of, creative types of stories in newspapers, speaking engagements by Barbara Franklin and the other women appointees, and some I did myself, too. We really, in a sense, were dealing with two different audiences, too. We had the public outside, and we also had people within government that we had to, we use this phrase, stroke them. And I have felt very much all the way along that the president himself is very committed to this idea of promoting women and of bringing about legislation that affects women and improves their status, both economically, socially, whatever. But I think there have been some people that around in government that haven't really gone along with it. So that was another thing that we've been doing, is trying to work with them and convince them that women are just as capable as men, and certainly are as intelligent as men, can do the job just as well as men can. So it's been a really exciting project. We've been working a lot with women's organizations. That was one of our major groups. And we had organizations ranging from the more radical ones, such as the National Organization for Women, all the way down to the American Nurses Association, the Home Ec Group, the teachers, the deans and counselors, and held several meetings with these women's organizations, with leadership, to let them know we cared about what they think and to ask them for ideas. Then, of course, the whole media area, that was very much what I was involved with, too, was working with the press. Yeah, sometimes fending them off and sometimes asking them to do something. And we tried to spread the story all around the country. Barbara had an extensive speaking schedule this year, as did the other women appointees. Now, let's face it, be realistic, this was also very much pegged toward re-electing the president, because we felt this was the first year in history that the women's vote was really going to make a difference and showed it did make a difference. And we like to feel that we had at least a part in bringing that vote about, a part of the president. Throughout all this, we've been trying to get across to everybody that although President Nixon has done more than any other president, he still realizes that there's a long way to go, a lot more to be done. We haven't tried any point to say that we've done everything we could do and everything's perfect. There still aren't enough women in top positions in government. And I think it's going to take a long time before there are, because women haven't been given a chance in the private and the public sector to get to a middle management position where they can then be in line for top positions. And these appointments that we're dealing with in the top level of jobs paying $28,000 and up, well, women traditionally are not at the salary range even where they can, there aren't that many who can be considered for $28,000 job, because traditionally women are underpaid. And so you're right there dealing with a smaller group from which you can draw.
Did Barbara Franklin's office direct itself solely to this top level, or did you try and work with this middle management, which would then be qualified for a top level?
We worked mainly with the top level. We had a lot of correspondence and calls from women at the mid-level of government or anxious to get in. Any of these people, we referred to Jane Spain at the Civil Service Commission. Now, of course, we have a good close working relationship with her because she is one of the president's top appointees. And he put her in the Civil Service Commission with the express directive that she work on increasing the opportunities for women in the civil service area. Because, mm-hmm. of course, they have power over all the hiring people in the government. And she's done a very good job over there. The mid-level has increased quite noticeably over the past year. The last count we did, I believe the last count was July 1972. We had increased already during the last 6 months. We had increased by some 1,300 women at mid-level positions. And that's GS 13 through 15 level. Mm-hmm. Now that was really significant because there was the cutback in federal hiring promotions. So that I think was every bit as significant really as the top level appointees, which by July mid-year there were some 105. As of today, there are 118 in the top positions, women appointees. Mm-hmm. And we're only in that number. There still are other women in the top grades of the government. We are only counting those for which our administration can take credit. Actual presidential appointees by President Nixon, cabinet appointees, that and anyone who's been promoted within this time frame since January of 69. We're not counting any holdovers. There are, I believe, two women on our list of 118 who were in before January 69 when President Nixon took office. But he reappointed them. And he didn't have to do that yet, but he actually reappointed them. So they're included in there, but those are the only two before. So it's a very exciting, I think it's fantastic progress when I look at where we were even just a couple of years ago.
Your primary responsibility has been to publicize.
Right, that's been mine.
Both inside and outside. Mm-hmm. Could you go over some of the logistics of how you manage this and who you worked with?
Okay, when I started out, I developed a public relations basic plan on how I was going to promote and publicize this whole effort. And I had one of my key areas was to be mass media, newspapers and magazines. Because what we needed to do was reach really the masses in all parts of the country. Mm-hmm. So this included things like special syndicated feature stories where I went to New York, talked with the editors, at the feature syndicates. And now this is the kind of thing where if you can get a story on a feature syndicate service, this can go out to as many as 700 or 800 newspapers around the country. Mm-hmm. And it's an ideal way to reach a lot of newspapers. Personal interviews. I set up several personal interviews with Barbara Franklin and key newspaper people, Associated Press, United Press. Again, you can blanket the country with the results of this. Then, as the surrogate program started, with people going around the country speaking on behalf of the president, we found areas where our women could really do this exceptionally well. And what we tried to do was schedule them into non-political groups. We tried to hit all the major conventions of women's organizations and arranged to have one of our women appointees speak at this convention. Also bring presidential greetings. We had special presidential messages prepared for them to take with them. Then this person, for instance, let's take Dixie Lee Ray as an example, who the president named to the Atomic Energy Commission, the first woman to ever be appointed to a full term on the AEC. Well, she has a natural subject she can talk about. One of the things she's interested in is the whole power crisis. Well, she could go before a group, say, the General Federation of Women's Clubs, for instance, and one of their major programs is the environment. Well, that's a natural group for her to speak about what we are doing about the energy crisis, without really actively campaigning for the president, but trying to get across what kind of stand he has taken on issues and what he has done to further things in that area. So that's the way we handle it with the women appointees. As we announced the appointees, our office had a great deal of say in when we would announce their appointments, and then we did really all the press work around it, except for the basic White House press release. And my job was, that was where I got to use my ideas and develop publicity. One example was when Cynthia Hall was nominated by President Nixon to the tax court. I arranged to have a news conference for her out in San Francisco, because she's from Los Angeles, California. We wanted to get good West Coast publicity on this, so she was going to be in California and San Francisco at the American Bar Association meeting. Well, this was a natural place, because we had a captive press already there at the ABA convention, so what better way than, here you've already got them, so you can, so I arranged a news conference at the ABA convention for her, which was attended by about 35 press people that way. And we arranged for the announcement to be made here at the White House at 11 o'clock in the morning, so that meant it was 8 a.m. out there. Well, that worked beautifully, because by then I met her and called Associated Press, United Press, who had already gotten word from the White House. Then they came and both did extensive feature stories on her, took pictures, sent it to the Los Angeles newspapers, used it in the San Francisco newspapers, and we really did blanket the West Coast with that. Mm-hmm. And I shepherded her around to television stations for personal interviews. And we made the network news and the evening newscasts in the stations. So it was really a heavy promotional kind of thing is what I've been doing. When Barbara Franklin gave speeches, I tried to arrange at least 2 television appearances, and where she would actually go to the studio, because I could get much more mileage if these people go to these places instead of making everybody come to you. They always were sort of surprised at this. I didn't think people from the White House did that. And then set up, depending on the size of the city, 2 to 3 newspaper interviews. And so in that way you could turn a one-day trip where Barbara was speaking to a group. A one-day trip would result in hopefully 2 or 3 television interviews at prime time, and then follow-up newspaper articles. So and I did the same with a lot of the other women when they went out speaking too. I could have had a staff of 25 to handle their PR role, but it was just neat. So I really zeroed in on the top appointees and the ones who had some unique thing that was particularly unusual that would have a great deal of appeal. And gee, the women did beautifully. The clippings, what we got, because we don't have a clipping service, which is unfortunate, because you never really have an idea of all that has been in. But I was just astounded at the response from that. It was very encouraging. And I think we managed in all this. We had special events. We arranged for women to be sworn in president's office, for instance. And we would have a press photo opportunity. We just really tried to merchandise everything we could having to do with women. When the Equal Rights Amendment was up before the Senate, there had been a great deal of controversy about this because people weren't quite clear on how the president stood on the Equal Rights Amendment, even though he had endorsed it in 1951. Plus, he had expressed in 68, he had re-endorsed the amendment. People just swore up and down that he really wasn't for it. So, and this was totally untrue, but they didn't quite believe it. So that, as it was in the Senate, the president wrote a letter to Senator Hugh Scott, again expressing his urging that the Senate pass the Equal Rights Amendment to bring equality to women. And this was on a Saturday, March 18th, in fact. And Barbara Franklin and I were out on the West Coast at that point for a speaking engagement. She had had that Saturday morning, in fact. And we got the word that the president had sent this letter to Hugh Scott. And she and I personally got on the phone. We had adjoining rooms. We each got on the telephone and called some 200 heads of women's organizations and press people to tell them that the president had endorsed the amendment. And they were just thrilled to hear from us. They were thrilled, number one, to hear he re-endorse it again. And number two, the fact that we would take the time to call them and tell them this. They really. And that was when we, that was one of the early times that we had just started this personal contact with these groups and trying to let them know that we are human here and we do care and understand their concerns. And then, of course, the amendment did pass the Senate about almost three days later, I believe. Mm-hmm. And then we wrote a letter to the, over Barbara Franklin's signature, wrote letters to each of these women's organizations. Of course, they obviously knew it had passed, but it was just a public relations gesture again, I think. In fact, we did frequent mailings throughout the year to the women's organizations to bring them up to date on what was happening for them. We also played a role in behind the scenes pushing for legislation affecting women, working with the people on the Hill, helping them with research, providing them with ideas. Anything we could do, again, it wasn't just the jobs for women, anything affecting women. Daycare is a very controversial subject, and we had to deal with that all year. The Economic Opportunities Act of 1972 that the president had vetoed, which has been called the Christmas Tree Bill, I understand. It's about a 45-page act, which had tacked onto it at the last minute a plan that would have put the federal government in the daycare business. Well, this is not what we feel we want to do. This is not the right way. So this was forever after has been called the president's daycare veto, even though he vetoed the whole act for other things in the daycare they happened to be tacked on. So we sort of had to live with that problem this year. We do feel that there has to be more basic study on the whole daycare issue. I don't think anybody has an answer yet. So we didn't quite manage to turn the mood around on that. It's a highly emotional subject. That and abortion are both highly emotional subjects. We just realized halfway through we're not going to make any headway on trying to convince anybody of our stand on abortion. So we just had to say it is a highly personal subject and it's very emotional. And the president has taken a personal stand on daycare, I mean on abortion, but that's not up to the, it's not federal law. Abortion has to do with state laws, and we just left it at that. Mm-hmm. So,
to go back to some of the things which you mentioned briefly, in trying to reach the printed media, mm-hmm. did you draft articles which were suggested mm-hmm. for printing? Did you actually work on them?
I only did that twice. I found that the simple personal contact of picking up the phone and calling, say, Fran Lewin with Associated Press and saying, gee, Fran, Cynthia Hall's just been named in the tax court, and I'm sure you saw the announcement last week. And gee, she'd be a really fascinating person for you to interview. You know, she's got a 14-year-old daughter and a 1-year-old baby, and she drives around in this car with a car seat. And she's a talented tax attorney. I think she'd make a good feature story. So that was the way I really did it, was personal contact. Whenever I was in another city, I would sit down with the newspaper people and brief them in advance. Now, if I was, say Barbara was in Dallas to give a speech, first of all, I would call them on the phone from here. And that sort of blew their minds. They were just finally said, Judy Kaufman for the White House. And they were just, most of them were ecstatic. They just had this happen before. And I would give them a little rundown on Barbara Franklin. In fact, she was going to be speaking to the BPW group out there on Thursday night, I think. And I thought they might like to interview her. And then I would send them a packet of material about the progress the president made, the pointing of the biography on Barbara, picture, whatever current information I felt was timely for me to have. Then I would follow up in a few days with another phone call saying, now, what time would you like to interview her? And I can't think of, I really can't think of one time I was turned down on that approach. So just a very personalized contact. And we got to know various newspaper people around the country because we'd been through Detroit, for instance, and several people interviewed Barbara Franklin. So then this tied in because someone else would be going through Detroit, so I could pick up the phone and call them and say, well, gee, would you like to, maybe you'd like to talk to so-and-so. Also, another thing I did, which I'd almost forgotten about, was when there was a major appointment of a woman, I would get on the phone and call, I'd pick a bunch of newspaper women's editors around the country, or business editors. I'd try to get some things on the business pages and the general news pages, as well as the women's pages. And so I would set up a phone interview for them. So maybe this woman was here in Washington at that point, but the newspaper person in Phoenix could have a phone interview. And that worked out really well. And I had several newspaper editors who asked me each time we had a woman to be sure to call because they would like to do a phone interview. Some newspapers have a policy that they can't do it. So there were a few I couldn't work out with. But that seemed to work quite well. Television, I pretty much went with television newscasts and had hoped to do things like get on the Today Show and that kind of thing. But that's a rough thing, and we had a lot of, let's face it, the first family was on this program, Julie and Tricia, and the cabinet people. So we felt really, really, didn't even try that method. We just really didn't do that too much. I think now we probably would have more success this year, but it would be election year. I just had to face up to the fact we weren't going to get 10 women on the Today Show because they were after cabinet level types, you know. So, and we don't have a woman in the cabinet yet, as everybody keeps saying. So.
Yes.
We've tried. And the president's tried very hard too, but just we haven't done that yet. Then, we tried to take advantage of people's hometowns, sending them back to their hometowns. I went back to my hometown. Barbara went back to her hometown. And, of course, the purpose of any speeches anybody gave was the media coverage. Because I had an interesting incident. I was speaking in Bowling Green, Ohio, to a group at Bowling Green University. And it turns out I was the first administration person who'd ever been up to Bowling Green. And it was quite an experience. But the funny little thing on the trip was Bonnie, my assistant, set me up with press interviews because I thought I couldn't pick up the phone myself and say, listen, I'm coming, would you like to interview me? So the first place I went when I got to Toledo was to a restaurant that doesn't allow women in at noon. They wouldn't let me in either because I'm a woman. So the headline, I had an interview with the Toledo Blade, and the headline was Women's Rights Official Visits Toledo, Finds Can't Eat in Local Restaurant. But then it went into this, it was gorgeous because it went into how the president had appointed more women than ever before, and here was this person who works here at the White House, and she couldn't get in this restaurant. So it came out beautifully, the administration. It was gorgeous, you know, couldn't have been better. And we didn't even plan. So that was one of the interesting things I found about this year, and I know Barbara feels this way too, was that we did enough traveling around the country that we really got a feeling of the mood of the people. And I don't think you get this just sitting in Washington. I remember places like Buffalo, New York, Toledo, Ohio, Dallas, Fort Worth, various places out in the West Coast. You really had an idea what people were thinking when you got in those places. One of the things that was obviously very much on their mind this year was Mrs. Nixon's role and how much she had stepped up her activities and her travels. And they felt this was very reflective of the president's general attitude on the role of women. So that seemed to be a good good public relations move from our standpoint, because certainly people in the hinterlands certainly noticed that. I was constantly asked, or people would comment to me constantly about Mrs. Nixon's increasing role, and they really liked that. I do think our credibility on this whole women's area has improved greatly in the past year. I think all it took was working on it. I mean, we had the materials there. We were just merchandising and promoting it. I wish I could go on, but I have to go on to some else.
Did you work with Mrs. Nixon staff or with her?
No, we no. Except Mrs. Nixon would, she called Barbara a few times and asked to be updated on what was happening for women, which we thought was interesting and encouraging, and we were thrilled about that. So we did keep Connie Stewart furnished with materials as things happened, as new appointees were named, as legislation passed. We developed an issues book on women's issues, which we distributed to our women appointees, and Mrs. Nixon and the girls each got a copy. Just so they would know where we stood in various legislative areas, what had passed, what was in the works. And we kept that issues book updated each month. That's how it was a very useful thing for everybody to have. We held meetings starting in, oh my goodness, those meetings started back in June, in fact, with our women appointees. Now, these were strictly with our presidential appointees, because the other ones were prohibited from any overt political activity because of the Hatch Act. So we met first once a month and then every other week in the Roosevelt Room with these women, people like Helen Bentley, Virginia Nauer, Pat Hitt, and just went over, again, the women's issues. We had a session with them on how to prepare for being on television, which they seemed to really appreciate, what they should wear. What they shouldn't wear. That seemed to be very helpful too. We tried just generally to keep in touch with them. And then as we scheduled them for speeches, and they scheduled themselves, we tried to be sort of backup people, because many of them, for instance, don't have their own public relations or public affairs staffs. In fact, some of them don't have anyone at all. So I would get these phone calls. Usually I would get a phone call on a Tuesday saying that on Wednesday someone was going somewhere to give a speech and couldn't I line up some newspaper interviews. And so I did the best I could in trying to, you know, help augment their staff work. So, because after all, we were all in it for the same thing. We got the president reelected, and that was part of it.
Was the issues book and these meetings solely directed at campaign efforts? Or will this be something which will be continued?
I am assuming it. Well, ours basically, in all honesty, was directed toward the campaign. But I think there is a continuing need for this, because I think the whole women's movement is getting stronger and stronger. I think it was Peg Heckler at the convention who called this the year of the woman. I like to think of it as the era of the woman. Era, E-R-A. Sounds like year. So I would think with Ann Armstrong coming on board, I'm assuming that much of this activity will be centered in her operation, and that it will go on. I think that it has to go on, because I think people are interested enough in it, and I think there's enough interest internally in the whole effort that I can't imagine it will be just dropped. Barbara Franklin likes to say she hopes to see the day when her job is unnecessary, that there isn't a need to have a woman specifically to recruit women. We may be moving into that time now, I don't know. I think proposing candidates, women candidates for jobs, has become a matter of course with the entire recruiting staff, from what I can see. It's no longer a special, isolated little thing that's over in one corner and everything else is on the other side of the room. So I would think that would probably, as we move into the be the next 4 years, I would think that would probably be absorbed into the recruiting effort. But I sure don't think we can drop the whole women's thing. If we do, we'll be a step backwards and we can't afford that.
Back on drafting, on the mailings and the issue books and things like that, who drafted?
That was my little project, my big project. I did all the drafting of the issues books, and then Barbara and I sat down and went over the final copy. Any of the written materials, this office, well, except for the first correspondence, which Barbara did her own, I was really the staff writer. The mailings were all mine. So I would say that was one of my areas.
Who was your research assistant? Or
Bonnie Gage. And she learned a lot this year. Bonnie is actually my secretary, and I like to call her my assistant because she took on much more than the secretarial duties. Mm-hmm. In fact, there was one, someone's confirmation, whose confirmation was it? It must have been Cynthia Hall's, yes. It had been scheduled to be on the floor of the Senate. Days and days went by, nothing happened. So late one Friday afternoon, Bonnie, bless her heart, called over there to her contact and said, "What's happened to Cynthia Hall's confirmation?" And they said, "Oh, we forgot. It was supposed to go on the floor. We totally forgot about it." Well, and it was just, and they were adjourning for, I don't know what recess it was, but they weren't going to be back in like for 3 weeks or something. And because of her calling over there, they put on the floor and Cynthia Hall was confirmed. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it would have sat around. And Cynthia was anxious to get to Washington and get started. She had her family on the way here, all this stuff. So that's why I said Bonnie cannot really call herself a secretary. She's putting in an assistant. It's been a lot of, just a lot of prodding for people, you know. And working with the departments, I think, in all this, trying to not sound like the White House is trying to tell you what to do, we try to be friendly and helpful and work with people rather than making them feel like we were ordering them to do something. And I think we succeeded in doing that.
In mentioning working with the departments, what specific offices or people did you work with extensively in the departments or in other offices in the White House?
Well, we worked with departments, of course, when anyone was sworn in or nominated, we worked closely with them on coordinating that kind of thing. There were some people who couldn't be sworn in the president's office. We did it in the departments. We worked with the Equal Employment Opportunities Commission quite closely because we had all sorts of contact with people on sex discrimination issues, for instance. Well, Ethel Walsh, who is one of the president's top women appointees, is at the EEOC. So we worked with her. So at least someone would get back to these people when we had a letter. It wasn't just a letter coming in and us running and saying, "Gee, we're really glad to hear from you. Appreciate your comments." We tried to respond in a sensitive way. And again, just let people know that we did care about it. And that their concern was important to us and we wanted to help them. We worked with the Civil Service Commission quite closely. I found people over there are extremely helpful. I mean, they would have a call from the press, for instance, try to stir up some trouble. And they would call me and advise me of this, and we'd talk it over and figure out what the answer should be, what the figures were that we had to get. So I worked quite closely with them. Trying to think, well, we worked with, on the whole women's area, with Virginia Allen, who's over at the State Department. Even though she's not specifically in the women's area anymore, she was. And she was chairman of the President's Task Force on Women's Rights and Responsibilities. And what a long way we've come since that report was issued by that task force. And we went back over it the other day and realized at least, I would say, 3/4 of the items proposed by the task force have been accomplished during this administration, which I think is remarkably good record. So we worked with her. She, in fact, this office helped place her at the State Department. She was one of our candidates. She's Deputy Assistant Secretary of Public Affairs. And she has great knowledge and great contacts in the whole of these areas. So she was very, very helpful. those. Trying to who else we work with. Well, then as individual situations came up, we worked with other departments. Worked closely with people here at the White House. I would say the domestic council, for instance, was one. In fact, they would get drafts of of materials, say, from the labor, let's take the labor department, a draft of materials about women. Well, usually those things were a disaster. And thank heavens, the domestic council would send them up here and say, please take care of this. Well, this usually meant rewrite the whole thing. And then it would go back over there to the labor department. And usually it was simply a case of whoever had written it to begin with didn't have updated facts.
Are you saying the drafts were used by members of the White House staff or by members of the department?
By members of the cabinet. These were for issues books for the cabinet people to use and for people, their people in their departments when they went out speaking and they had questions on the women's area. You know. So we got involved in any manner having to do with women at the White House, kind of thing. Really, it was left up to us to handle, I said, all the press on women appointees.
Did you work with the press office, the White House press office?
Yes. Well, yes and no. Well, they would do the standard White House press release. Mm-hmm. Then I would just go ahead and promote the heck out of who his appointee was. So that was my thing to do. In fact, we had a briefing in April in the press office with a presidential statement and a fact sheet that we distributed on how many women there were in the government at that time. And I wrote that and took it to the press office the night before the event. And they ran it off for us. And then we had the briefing over there, and Barbara Frankel and Jane Spain held the briefing. And so we really, yeah, we operate on fairly independently. We found if we really want to get stuff done, everybody is too busy to worry about it for us. So we went ahead and did it. Mm-hmm. And whenever we asked for help, we got help. And but we didn't ask that often, just because we felt the important thing was to get the job done.
Mm-hmm. Was the same thing true of your contacts on the Hill? Did you work through Bill Timmons?
Occasionally, but often when we needed an answer or we needed to suggest something, he was, you know, we couldn't find him or we had time to, so we'd just go directly to him. Fairly independently. Mm-hmm.
When you mentioned your contacts on the Hill, are you referring to individual members of Congress?
Well, pretty much staff people. Staff of members of Congress, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Were there any in particular that stand out as having been frequently contacted on women's matters?
There weren't that. People who were that frequently contacted. It was just a case of who you knew and a very loose-knit kind of thing of who you might know in that area that you could call and say help and call and say please help, you know. So there were no frequent ones.
Since, as I said, we haven't talked with anyone else on Barbara Franklin's staff, could you give me a breakdown of the chain of command and
Barbara Franklin reports to Fred Malik, mm-hmm. Because she is on Fred's recruiting staff. Now, Barbara's work this year really centered on the re-election. So Barbara herself did not do that much of the recruiting. Judy Cole in Barbara's office was the one who did most of the recruiting and the searching for candidates. Mm-hmm. Judy Cole is the one who talked Dixie Ray into coming back. She wasn't sure she wanted to do it. Judy talked her into it. Then Judy helped find a job for Cynthia Hall's husband because Cynthia wouldn't come unless her husband had a job. So that was the chain of command there. Then I reported to Barbara. To the outside, we said during the year that I was on her client staff because for there to be a special publicity type person assigned to a specific recruiter would not have been too appropriate for people to necessarily know. So I was on her client staff. And that just sounded better than doing the other thing. So I would say I was on her client staff, but I really, most of my time was concentrated on the women's recruitment area. and that got a little hazy after a while. People started when they saw I wasn't in Herb Klein's office. I was in my own office on the third floor. He was on the first. I don't think they quite believed it, but no one ever really pinned me down, so that was okay. So I was here for the media and for the public relations, which would be called outside the building, called communications here. And then I have a secretary, and Judy Cole has one, and Barbara Franklin has a secretary. Mm-hmm. And that seems like a lot of people concentrated in one area, but we could have easily had twice the number of us and done even more. I think it's amazing that we got as much done as we did. It was hard work. It was not always easy by any means. It had some difficult times. And some times when the press badgered us and we had to get ourselves out of it.
Did you actually work with Mr. Klein at all?
No, I worked with him once when we arranged for Marina Whitman, right after she was appointed by the president to the House of Economic Advisors. We held a news conference for her in Herb Klein's office, mm-hmm. and that was my little project. And I worked with him on that. In fact, I bumped into Herb Klein one day, and I thought, gee, I wonder if he still recognizes me, because I, of course, called him and talked with him when I came here. He knew what we were saying about who I was. Did work with Ken Collison on Herb's staff very often through, various projects. Call him and say, who do you know at NBC, or who do you know such and such, or what do you think about such and such? And he'd call you out on women's stuff. Mm-hmm. Any of the women's things really end up being referred up here. You'd have to be nervous of the women's office and the White House.
What about other people who kind of were assigned the women's area? I know Mr. Finch had been mentioned in this. But
he has been extremely helpful. Really, as sort of a counselor to Barbara, kind of thing when she needed advice. If I would call Bob Finch and ask what he thought about an idea she might have or something. He was extremely helpful. Don Rumsfeld was very helpful. Both of them had a personal commitment to the idea that women should be accorded the same respect as men. They were very serious about this and willing to help. Man over at the Labor Department, Dick Grunewald, was extremely helpful in our efforts. Sat down with Barbara and me several times during the year and discussed what they were doing for women and what kind of seminars they were having. I felt he was very sympathetic to all of them. I really found, and I had a lot of contact on a social basis with staff types from the departments. I really got the impression throughout the year that the members of the cabinet had become very personally committed to promoting women. That this was not just something on paper that they had to do because the president said he had ordered them to look at their hiring procedures for women. I felt that they themselves had become convinced that this was right and what they should do. A few little memos people showed me that were circulated to departments by the cabinet heads, confidential type memos to asking them, ordering them to really focus on hiring a woman. So I think I really think we made some great progress, and I think certainly talking about it has certainly helped people believe that we made the progress. But I'm firmly convinced we have done it. I don't think I'm a victim of being in my own public relations. I think it's all true that we really have accomplished a lot, and that there's a lot more to do. And I think just from hearing some of the remarks that the president has made at various swearing ceremonies we've had, we had one crazy idea which I'll record for posterity. Back in February or March, Barbara and I spent about 4 days just sitting down planning things, and we called the Wild Idea of the Week. And we came up with about 20 events that we wanted to have between then and November 7th. But one of these events was we decided we would have a statue of Susan B. Anthony, a women's suffrage leader, placed in the White House. So I don't know what made us think of that, but we did. And so then we found how we could get the statue, and Lucy Winchester knew how to do that. So Lucy made arrangements to have the statue copied from the National Portrait Gallery. Well, I thought, I misunderstood Barbara, because Barbara turned to me and said, well, now it's all your project. I said, fine. Well, I thought that Lucy also arranged to have this place in the White House and everything. All I had to do now was, you know, get the statue, figure out how we were going to pay for it. And, you know, well, that wasn't so. Nothing had been done with the statue. So here I was faced with a statue in my name that had been ordered, Susan B. Anthony, to the tune of $750, which I didn't really feel like paying for myself. And so I made a quick call to Virginia Allen and explained the problem, and she said, oh, she'd ask for members of the task force if they would chip in money for it. And then I called Jacqueline Gutwilling, who's chairman of the Citizens Advisory Council of Stassi Women, group appointed by the president. And she said, oh, sure, she'd ask her members if they would ante up. So these checks started coming in, made out to Judy Kaufman. I said, please put for Susan B. Anthony on the check. I don't want any question about this ever to arrive. Well, then we put in a schedule proposal. And our first schedule proposal had the president accepting the statue of Susan B. Anthony in the Oval Office, and then it would be placed in the White House. I, meanwhile, gone over and walked through, figuring out where we could put it, and decided the only appropriate place was that lobby over the east side, in the east wing. So I didn't see any way we could put in the red room or the blue room. But I hadn't talked to Clement Conger about this. I thought he might take exception to placing this statue in the White House. Well, anyway, we turned in this one schedule proposal. Well, that was shot down, which we figured it would be. Then we did one for Mrs. Nixon to do it. Well, that was shot down. By this time, it's getting on toward the election, and everybody decides that, gee, this is going to be such a, it's going to look so political. How can we dare do it then? Meantime, the statue comes. I pay for the statue. I had to open a, I called Fred Fielding, and I said, Fred, I have a statue that I have to pay for. He said, I don't want to be accused of commingling any funds or anything. So he said, we'll set up a separate Susan B. Anthony account at the bank. So Bonnie went over to Riggs and set up the Susan B. Anthony fund account. And I was chairman and Bonnie was made treasurer, so we'd have two signatures so no one would ever question any of this stuff. I had to sign like 30, 40 checks because these women, some of them had sent in two checks. We didn't have enough money, so they sent in some more money. Bonnie had to go to the airport, pick up his statue, bring it in the White House. They had to x-ray the whole thing, which was ludicrous. So, to make a long story short, the statue has not yet been put in the White House. It's sitting in my office on the floor. Bonnie has gotten the Portrait Gallery to donate a pedestal on the grounds that it's going to be in the White House. And the intention now is hopefully to have, say, Mrs. Nixon accept it after the first of the year sometime. Mm. That was, I think, of that list of 20 projects that we came up with, that's the only one that we didn't do, so that's not bad. Mm-hmm. At least we've got a half done.
She's here. Okay. I don't know if I can follow that one. Did you work very closely with any of the groups at RNC, the National Federation of Republican Women, or with groups at the committee
for
the re-election
process? We worked with all of those. Worked very closely with Ann Armstrong's office. Whenever we had a mailing over here, we got her copies of the mailing, and she sent those out to her mailing list, as did Connie Armitage. We tried to sort of help coordinate the women's things with the Committee for the Re-election of the President, too. What time is it? What time is it?
It's 12:07.
Oh, my goodness. Hmm. All right. Yeah, we had a car to go someplace. Do you want to continue this later?
Well, and I have a few very specific questions that I want to ask you.
Oh, okay. Why don't you go ahead? Just shake us down.
All right.
Or we can.
Where are you going?
I'm going to go to Daniel J. Edelman Incorporated. It's a public relations firm, and I'm going to be their vice president of government relations.
And where is that?
Well, I'll be right here at 1730 Pennsylvania Avenue, because the firm is based in Chicago, but because the government relations mainly take place in Washington, I'll be based here. I will be doing some work out in the states with the legislatures in the states, but mainly I'll be working with people on the Hill.
Do you have a more or less permanent address where correspondence could reach you over the next 10 years indefinite time, parents or something.
Right. Oh, parents, you mean? Oh, I see what you mean. That's probably a good idea. Give both, yeah. Okay. Now, my parents are in Shaker Heights, 20876 Almar, A-L-M-A-R, Drive, Shaker Heights, Ohio, 44122. And their name is Mr. and Mrs. Nelson B. Moore. And I'm all right.
Okay.
Yeah, they'll be there for the next 50 years. I hope.
Okay, and you're
then I had a local address. It's, my home is 9105 Hempstead, H-E-M-P-S-T-E-A-D, Avenue, Bethesda, 2034.
And you said that you really don't know who will be assigned your responsibilities.
I don't, I don't think that my specific responsibilities, I don't think they'll bring anyone in to do specifically what I was doing. Because I was brought here with the express intention of getting the president reelected. And I knew that when I came, when I talked with Fred Malik. I had no visions of this being a permanent job.
What was your relationship with Pat Hooton?
We worked with her somewhat. She was really more on volunteer efforts, not necessarily women. So we didn't really work with her that much.
Was she your main contact at the committee?
No, she was one of our main contacts. Barbara worked with Clark McGregor quite extensively, with Fred Malik. And we worked with the Women's Spying Squad that Barbara McGregor had for the campaign. In fact, we provided issues books for them and helped, when Carol Buchanan was doing the publicity, I helped with that kind of thing too. And then they took off and ran with that thing. They did a beautiful job on that. So what we did was help get it started. And then they did. But our main contacts were really were Clark and Fred, Jeff, Jeff and those were the main people to come in.
And you said most of your files will be left with Barbara.
Right.
Are the files, do you feel that they're an adequate documentation of what you've done? Does it show what is your work is distinguished from other people in the office?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely, yeah, because mine's all the publicity and the progress reports of communications. And in fact, there are progress reports in the file that I've been doing. That would differentiate between mine and everybody else's, definitely. Good file on women's organizations that we've developed, contacts of women's organizations, and information about them.
You have a biographical sketch or resume.
Sure.
Put in the file.
Oh, yeah, sure.
It kind of helps to know a little bit of background.
Right,
Were there any other areas that you worked in or people that you worked with?
Yeah, the Citizen Advisory Council. That's why I was wondering if we could continue this afternoon. Because there's some other. Yeah, why don't we do that? Because there is some more. I think we ought to have, like, the Citizen Advisory Council and stuff.
Okay.
That I think is important to this whole thing.
Well, I'll just then turn it off and leave it in the
Okay, great. Yeah, I'm taking Barbara to lunch is what I'm doing. So.